Welcome to the Property Lovers Podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Grubisher. This podcast series is all about giving you a competitive edge in your property journey. We'll be discussing little known strategies, tools, and information to help you add value and create wealth through property. Now, obviously, we don't know you or your unique position, so this is not financial or investment advice. It is information of a general nature, and you should always seek professional advice as to your situation before you ever invest in anything. But if you want to play a bigger game in property and want to use property as your vehicle to create wealth and, more importantly, freedom, then you're in the right place. Let's do this. Let's get started. In this episode, we're going to talk about the big wide world of finance when it comes to property. A lot of people get thrown by the big numbers, especially in such a huge property market that's risen so fast in the last 12 months or so. And they think, oh, you have to have money to make money, and I'm never ever going to save up enough of a deposit. If you look at it that literally, yes, it can be challenging because most banks will lend you 80% of the purchase price of a property. So they expect you to have saved up 20% of the purchase price. And on top of that, you're going to have to cover all the invisibles, the legal costs, as well as stamp duty, which is a state tax payable upon the purchase of a property. So that can all add up. And in a rising market, it constantly feels like they're moving the goalposts because you're chasing your tail and you think you've saved enough deposit, and then prices go up, everything goes up, and you're still falling short again. So the important thing to remember is with property that it is, they say, safe as houses. It's bricks and mortar, and you don't have to use your own money. So really, really powerful to leverage other people's money. You'll see that written in property books and in all the literature as OPM, other people's money. Now, leverage is something we have to be careful of because leverage can really magnify your profits. If you can do something with none of your own money, or no money down, as they call it, using other people's money and make a profit, you can pay back everyone and then keep a lot for yourself, which sounds really attractive. And that's the idea of leverage. It magnifies your profits. But when it goes the wrong way, leverage can also magnify your losses. And I got caught on the wrong side of that in the global financial crisis. I had a lot of debts, a lot of loans. I was using a lot of other people's money, betting on big gains and big profits and the market going up and me manufacturing or adding a lot of value to the properties I had. And when it all turned and I couldn't borrow any more money, it meant, and prices started falling, it meant that it magnified my losses and left me short. It unraveled. The domino effect meant that I had nothing. Worse than nothing, I had a massive big hole of debt. So very, very dark days. And I know what it means to be on the wrong side of other people's money or finance. Now, as we know, in Australia, we had a Banking Royal Commission in 2019 and leading up to that, looking at responsible lending. So they overhauled our market. We actually already had laws in place post-global financial crisis to basically protect people when they're buying residential real estate from getting over their heads in debt, which is what happened in the global financial crisis. It was really easy to get a loan in the early 2000s and late 90s. If you had a pulse, basically, and you could fog up a mirror, you could qualify for a loan. So lots of people took on a lot of debt that they couldn't afford. And we had lots of lending products like low-doc loans and no-doc loans where people just signed away their lives and said, yeah, I can afford this loan. They didn't show their tax returns or their pay slips. And the bank just bet also on the property market continuing to rise. So fast forward to post-global financial crisis, we've had responsible lending. Banks really have to check you out before they lend money to you. And they're careful on how they lend. They have a duty of care to you as a borrower. And they have to make sure you can service the loan. So can you meet the repayments? So more and more often we're hearing people being told by the bank, bank, oh, you're too old. What if you retire? You won't earn anymore. You're taking on a 30-year loan. How will you ever pay for it? Or people being told you don't earn enough, or it's only your first job, you're so young. What if you lose your job? You'll be out on the street and you'll lose the property, so you can't qualify for a loan. Lots of reasons, and it continues to get harder. We now have comprehensive credit reporting, which means that banks have a duty to report you, and you've got a credit score, like what they do in the States. And your credit score dictates not just your ability to get a loan, but the interest rate that you are charged. So if you're late in paying your mortgage, the bank may list that on your credit report. You'll get a lower credit score and you'll pay more interest. So it's a lot more transparent and it's getting a lot harder. And that's why you have to be able to traverse the finance landscape. But the great thing right now is historically low interest rates. We've just never had rates like this. So even leading into the GFC, rates were like, you're paying 8%. So now you're paying under 2% in some instances. So a quarter of the loan repayments that you used to make. And that means that even though the property market may have doubled since then, your loan repayments are still going to be half. So if I owed $1 million back in 2008, and I now, because property prices have gone up, borrowed $2 million, so I've got a lot more debt, my loan repayments with rates so low are still going to be much less, like half of what they were, 10 years plus ago, which is great opportunity if you can borrow the money. So that becomes the obstacle. If you've got serviceability, that means if you're earning money and you can prove that on your pay slips or your tax returns, the bank will lend to you and you can get a really competitive rate. So the big four mainstream banks and other mainstream lenders are bound by, with a normal mainstream loan, the Consumer Credit Code. So that's Australia-wide laws around responsible lending. So banks have to assess you. They'll look at all of your past transactions. They'll look at a granular level into your bank accounts. They'll ask for statements of your credit cards and of your savings account, and they'll say, hang on a minute, you eat out too much, or you spend too much on dog food and you can't afford this loan. So it's very much on an individual basis, and there's been some case laws around that where the court have said, okay, if I don't own property, I may spend more, I may dine out because I've got no commitments, but I'm capable of not dining out and not having so much Uber Eats if I've got a mortgage to pay. So the courts have said people can take responsibility for their own decisions and banks don't have to be as strict in assessing those loans. That was a major case with Westpac Bank that went up to the higher courts on appeal. And banks don't have to, you know, look at how much you spend on peas and potatoes to decide whether you can afford a loan. But if you can't qualify on the paperwork, there are other loans. They call them now alt-doc, like alternative loans, and they may charge more interest, and they're second-tier lenders, so not mainstream banks, maybe someone like Pepper Finance, and where you're paying under 2% with the bank, you may pay 3% plus with a second-tier lender, and they may not look in their discretion at certain things. For example, they may not consider your credit score. So if you've got a low credit score that's pulling you down and meaning you can't qualify for a loan, then they won't look at that sort of thing. So it really pays to have a broker to look at your situation. They'll be able to tell you why you're not qualifying for certain lenders. And the more you apply for loans, the more it hits your credit score. So if I've tried to borrow $500,000 from Westpac and St. George and NAB and ANZ, and I've applied to all these banks and been knocked back, that will show on my credit score and it will pull my score down, and other banks won't want to lend to me either. So you've got to be really careful how you do this. Control the process. Don't let a lender make a credit inquiry and hit your credit record if they're not going to approve the loan. So you need a broker to have a business development manager to show them your situation, and they can say yes or no, it's not going to work. It doesn't fit our criteria. So you really need someone to put your loan in the right direction. We are passionate here at the DG Institute about helping people launch and progress along their property journey. And we have some free resources to really help you do that. First of all, we have our Real Estate Rescue Introductory Program, which is all about getting you up and running when it comes to buying under market distressed properties from really motivated sellers. You can get access to that program for free right now by going to www.dginstitute.com.au/freecourse1. That's www.dginstitute.com.au/freecourse and then the number one. We'll also leave links to these useful resources in the notes section. And for any other questions you might have around property and actually for all of your property needs, please visit our website at dginstitute.com.au because we are here to support you on your property journey and give you a real competitive advantage. So usually a bank will lend you 80% of the purchase price or the valuation of a property. However, in some situations, the bank will lend you more than that, up to 90%, sometimes 95% of the purchase price, if you buy what they call lender's mortgage insurance or LMI. You have to pay for that. It doesn't insure you, it insures the lender. So if you're borrowing more than 80%, and let's say the property market falls, let's say they lend you 90% and they're worried, like you're paying, let's say you're paying $1 million for a house, Sydney prices, you're paying $1 million, they're gonna lend you $950,000. You've only got $50,000 skin in the game. If the market drops 10% and your house is only worth $900,000, they've lost money on that. You're $50,000 shortfall now because the market shifted. What lender's mortgage insurance does, it is enables them to be able to claim that on insurance. So they still get paid their $950,000 and an insurer stumps up the difference. And then the insurer can chase you for the shortfall. So lender's mortgage insurance costs a flat fee, but you can borrow a lot more. And usually the interest rate is higher when you're borrowing more than the 80% mark. So swings and roundabouts, because the market moves a lot faster, or has at least in the last year or so. If you're manufacturing value, if you're renovating or improving a property, you can, you know, but with your own labor and sweat, you can increase the value of a property. So there's all sorts of finance beyond those second tier lenders or those who will go to a higher loan to value ratio if you pay lender's mortgage insurance. There's also private funding. So private funding, a bit like how we had disruptive change with taxi industry and we got Ubers, and with the hotel industry and we got Airbnb, so too is there disruptive change around banking and finance. We have fintech, so a lot of financial technology. We have a lot more lending products out there and a lot of private players lending money to people. Now, usually this won't be a credit code loan. It won't fall under the umbrella of responsible lending. You may borrow in a company or another entity. Private funding is great for shorter term deals. So buying, renovating, selling, in a flipping a property in a short space of time, or for property development. And this is discretionary lending. So what a private funder will usually look at is the deal, not you. They're not looking at your payslips or your tax returns or your ability to service the loan, to make the repayments. They're looking at the profit and the upside of a deal. And that's a matter for their discretion. So if you're building a brand new home or you're a development to sell, what they're going to look at is the profit on that. And sometimes they'll even capitalize the interest. In other words, you won't have to make interest repayments. They'll add the interest to the loan or to the debt so that you will pay it all back when you sell the property. And there are many things in between all of these loan products. A lot of people get their start with money money partners, so friends, family, people they know, like-minded people collaborating or coming together to joint venture and fund a deal. Reason for that is interest rates are so low. People with money are looking for yield or return on investment. Where they would put their money in a term deposit, they're earning like less than 1%. It's not worth their while. And they love property. They may not have the time or the resources, but they know property is safe as houses. It's unlikely to crash and burn or drop in value. And they like to park their money there for a higher rate of interest. It's an income for them. So they may invest with you. And the other thing that commonly happens if you're looking to buy your first home is family members or someone can guarantee your loan. In other words, if you can't pay, then the bank will take their property. What lenders want in the finance space is best case scenario security over property, a mortgage over property. Mortgage from the word mort means death. So it's a death pledge. So basically, whatever happens to you, if you can't pay, if you lose your job, if you're injured and you can't work anymore, hell, if even you die, what a mortgage does, it says it doesn't matter what happens to the borrower, the bank gets the house. They have the security of the asset. And that's why lenders will lend more readily on property than any other asset class, just because of the level of control and the value in property, as opposed to the share market or precious metals or cryptocurrency or anything else that's out there. So as a property lover, you're in the right place with the right asset class at the right time in the market, because we've got disruptive change, a lot more versatility in lending products if you know where to go, how to look, and you're really focused about it. And we've got historically low rates, never been this low before. So even though prices have risen massively, if you can find the access to the leverage to get your foot on a property deal, then you can ride that wave as well. And there's so much out there, right down to a deposit bond. So you may not know about this. This is a magical tool. I was blown away when I first heard of deposit bonds, but if you're buying a property and you're not settling for a while, so for example, I may sign a contract now, but it's off the plan, it won't be built for another year or two, or I've agreed with the seller that, for example, I'll settle in 6 months' time or more, it's the time value of money. I don't need my 10% deposit right now, my 5% or whatever I'm going to pay. I only need it in 6 months, 12 months. So for settlements where you're going to buy a property in 3 months or more, usually you can get a deposit bond. That's an insurer that will put down the 10% deposit for you. If you can't pay it when it comes time to settle in the future, then they will pay the seller and they'll chase you for that 10%, but it's buying some time to get your foot on a property and without having to save that deposit, get your ducks in a row and settling sometime in the future. So if it's over 3 months, most deposit bond insurance companies, like a bank guarantee, it's an insurance company guaranteeing or going surety for your 10% deposit. So a big world out there, lots of opportunity. It's just getting the right knowledge and going to the right people. And as a property lover and part of this community, we have DGI Finance. So our own bespoke finance team to deal with any level of purchaser. So covering everything that we've talked about on this podcast, deposit bonds, mainstream lending, second tier lending, lenders, mortgage insurance, loans above 80% borrowings, as well as those private funding loans. So a lot out there, a lot of opportunity. Tune in and just find the deal first, and with the right access to the right people, with the right knowledge, the funding can be there as well. And with property, and you as a property lover, the beauty is you need money, yeah, but it doesn't have to be your money. You can leverage other people's money. If you're enjoying this podcast, we want to invite you to join the Property Lovers Facebook group. To find the group in Facebook, just search for Property Lovers. You'll see the group banner, which has the word Property Lovers Hub on it. It's a community for property lovers in Australia, and just like this podcast, it's been created to give you a competitive advantage so you can get superior results in property. Please come and join us today. And for any other information and all your property needs, please visit our website, dginstitute.com.au, because we've got a lot of other giveaways that can support you on your property journey. Things like negotiation, mental toughness. We've got a lot of mini courses there that can get you in the right space to hit the ground running when it comes to property acquisitions. That's it for today, but really looking forward to giving you more tools, more strategies, more support, and a competitive advantage when it comes to property in our next episode.